Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Dion Gordon Podcast. I am Corson, your host, the connoisseur of common sense, the purveyor of authenticity, the man who calls it right down the middle, Dion Tyree Gordon. Enough of the bullshit. Let's get to work. NFL Super Wild Card Weekend in the books. Three games played today as opposed to two, as has been in years past. The NFL decided to give us the gift of more football, gift of which I'm grateful for. I love football. This is a holiday to me. My intentions, my plans for this weekend. First of all, I had this weekend off from work. I have no attachments, no commitments, nothing I had to do this weekend. My entire goal, my only focus, my only intentions for this weekend were to sit around, do absolutely nothing, and watch football. And today I was successful in that. Three games, all three good close games, and went down to the fourth quarter. Indianapolis and Buffalo, Rams and Seahawks. Washington professional football team and plays in Landover versus Tampa Bay. Good football all day. Awesome. I can't complain. And for me, if I have no complaints, that's an anomaly because I usually think there's something wrong with everything. But nevertheless, football on all day today. I have no complaints. Even though my beloved 49ers are not participating in the NFL playoffs this year, if you've been listening to the podcast, you already know I let go about 2 or 3 months ago. I don't care. I saw the writing on the wall. I knew what was coming down the pipeline. I knew we weren't good enough this year. So it's okay. And it's actually, you know, from a anxiety standpoint, it's a lot better. There's no stress in watching these games. I don't mind watching other teams play. I have nothing at stake, nothing on the line. I don't gamble as much as I used to, and I don't have any money on this anymore. No strings attached. Whoever wins, wins. Whoever loses, loses. It's just football. As an objective football fan, I just appreciate watching playoff football, good players playing at a high level. And as we saw all day today, I'm sure we'll see again tomorrow. So today started Orchard Park, New York, upstate New York, Buffalo. Buffalo winning their first playoff game since 1995, 27-24 over Indianapolis. I felt like there was two plays in this game that really flipped this game and flipped the momentum in this game and really got it going for Buffalo. Starting the second quarter, and it's 10-7 Indianapolis. Indianapolis putting together a drive, stalls out a little bit. Frank Wright decides to go for it on fourth down. It was an 8-play drive. Went 55 yards, starting out the Indianapolis 41. They get down to within the 5-yard line and stall out, turnover on downs. A lot of people during the game and after the game in the fallout were asking the question, why did Frank Reich, up 10-7, decide to go for it on fourth down? I mean, I understand being aggressive and trying to take it to your opponent. You're the road underdog playing in a game you're not supposed to win in a hostile environment. Sometimes you got to take chances. It's playoff football. I get it. But you also got to get points. And you have the lead, you have momentum, everything's going in your favor. You go for it on fourth down, you don't get it. Now Buffalo has the football, and Josh Allen makes a play on first down, getting out of the pocket, scrambling to his right, about to run out of bounds, throws a strike downfield, first down. 3 plays later, they're in for 6. Now they have a 14-10 lead going into the half. So you went from a possibility of being up 13-7, applying more pressure to a Buffalo team that's playing in front of fans for the first time this season. Everyone knows what that Bills Mafia is about. You don't want to disappoint these people. You're trying to win your first playoff game since 1995. You got all the old Bills rooting for you. You got Jim Kelly on TV waving the pom-poms for you. You know, there was a lot of pressure, a lot of high expectations on Buffalo going into this game. There was no pressure on Indianapolis. So you got these guys down 10-7 with an opportunity to go up 13-7. I'll take that opportunity. I'm not going to, like I said, I understand being aggressive, but if I'm up 10, there's also a time where you got to be smart and just take the points that are there for you. You're up 10-7. And your drive stalls out in the 5-yard line. That's a chip shot field goal. Just take that and go up 13-7. Now you're down 14-10 going into the half. Like I said, then the lead grows to 17-10. Then in the second half, you put together another good drive. That drive stalls out. This time you attempt the field goal. Rodrigo Blankenship comes out and misses it, about a 42-yarder. But it's in Buffalo, the upstate New York, with the wind swirling and everything. And maybe that influenced Reich's decision not to go for the field goal the first time. You got a dome kicker having to come outside and kick. And like I said, in the poor weather conditions in Buffalo they typically have in January this time of the year. Well, he misses the field goal. Now it's 17-10 Buffalo, still with the lead. Very next possession, they take it downfield, score 24-10. Josh Allen's dropping it in the bucket, throwing a dart to Stephon Diggs. 24-10 Buffalo. Indianapolis comes back in the fourth quarter with a 7-play, 75-yard drive, culminating in a 9-yard touchdown pass from Phillip Rivers, making it 24-16. At this point, it's early in the fourth quarter. And once again, Reich decides to be aggressive, maybe a little bit too aggressive. Goes for two. They don't convert. So now the score remains 24-16. Once again, early in the fourth quarter, I didn't see a point, a reason to go for that two-point conversion. Once again, this would be a chip shot field goal. I know it's outdoors. I know it's Buffalo. I know your guy just missed a field goal earlier. You might not have 100% trust and faith in them, but he's an NFL professional kicker. He should be able to make that kick. I know it's an extra point. Extra points are not a given. There have been kickers missing extra points ever since they moved the extra point back a couple years ago. It's no longer a given. It's no longer a free 1 point. But still, this is an NFL professional kicker in an NFL playoff game. He should be able to make an extra point. You make it 24-17, you're still within striking distance. Now you're down 24-16. It's a two-score game still. You put yourself in a hole you didn't need to be in. And unfortunately for Indianapolis, they weren't able to climb out that hole, losing 27-24. Made it a good game down the stretch. Jack Doyle caught another Rivers touchdown pass late in the game to bring it to 27-24, which ended up being the final. They put together a drive late at a fumble, which should have been called a fumble on the field. They had to review it and everything else. That was clear as day that the receiver caught the ball, got up, tried to run with it. Jordan Poyer came in and punched the ball out. Buffalo recovered. That should have been the end of the game right there. They didn't rule it in favor of Buffalo. They decided that the player's knee was down, which obvious videotape shows you to the contrary. I don't know what they were looking at in New York. I don't know what was going on in that situation, but a last gasp Hail Mary pass from Philip Rivers, first of all, wasn't even long enough to get to the end zone, but it was ended up being knocked down. And in that moment, if you're a Buffalo fan, you had to be ready to shit yourself, because you have another moment in a football game where it's coming down to a last-second Hail Mary. And at this point, I assume every Bills fan, every Bills player has PTSD from the Hail Mary that Kyler Murray threw a few months ago to DeAndre Hopkins to beat them. When Hopkins went up in triple coverage with Poyer and Micah Hyde and Tre'Davious White all surrounding him, he just made the play. You know, Arizona was able to win that game. I know every Bills fan, player, anyone who is associated with the team, anyone who likes the Buffalo Bills had to be shitting bricks at that moment, seeing that the game was coming down to a last-second Hail Mary. But at the same time, Philip Rivers is not Kyler Murray. He doesn't have the arm strength that Kyler Murray has. I'm surprised they didn't bring in Jacoby Brissett to throw that Hail Mary, which is something Indianapolis has been doing throughout the season, knowing that Brissett has more arm strength than Philip Rivers. They brought in Brissett to throw last-second Hail Marys. They opted not to do that in this game, and the ball fell short. It was knocked away anyway. So big win for Buffalo. First playoff win since 95. Good to see that. This is a team with a strong, passionate fan base. Bills fans are loyal, and those people, they're good people, and they've been waiting. They've been hungry a long time to see a good Buffalo Bills football team, and this year they finally gotten their wish. That team is good on both sides of the ball. Although I will say this for Buffalo, the running game, got to get something going with that. You can't just rely on Josh Allen to go out there and win you playoff game after playoff game. As you proceed through these playoffs and play against better competition, and inevitably if you want to get past Kansas City, you're going to have to go on the road to Kansas City to do that. I think you're going to need to be able to run the football to beat Kansas City at home at Arrowhead. As good as Josh Allen is, I don't see him going in there and winning a football game versus the defending champions by himself. So you're going to need Singletary and the rest of them boys to get the running game going and not just overly rely on 17 to make play after play after play. He's more than capable. You know, Allen's a top five quarterback in his league right now. There's no question about that. He's got everything it takes from a physical standpoint to make plays and keep that team successful. But as I said, in playoff football, you know, you got to be able to run the football at some point. You got to be able to control clock, and especially going against a team like Kansas City, keep that dynamic offense off the field, keep 15 on the sideline, you have a better chance of winning the football game. But, you know, good win today. Go ahead and celebrate Bills Mafia, but do so responsibly. I know that's not going to happen. There's going to be plenty of people going through tables tonight in upstate Buffalo, New York. A lot of fire, furniture getting moved and broken, a lot of beer being drank. Adult beverages and other narcotics probably being consumed all over upstate Buffalo, New York, but that's fine. When your football team hasn't won a playoff game in 26 years, you have carte blanche to celebrate as you please. You got a top five quarterback, a top five receiver, your secondary on the back end is good. Just got to get better at pass rush and running the football. But I've been telling people before these playoffs started, I think there's only one team and one team only in the AFC that could walk into Arrowhead Stadium and come out with a win. And that's the Buffalo Bills. You're going to have to score points to beat Kansas City. You're not beating Kansas City with 14, 17, 23 points. You got to get at least 31. Now, Buffalo's offense is equipped to get 31 against Kansas City. Tennessee as well. Tennessee is a top-notch offense. But I think Buffalo is a team with Allen. He can match Mahomes play for play. That team, to me, is the one team in the AFC that has a shot to beat Kansas City at home in the playoffs. I'm not saying they're going to. I'm not predicting or forecasting such events taking place. But I think if I had to pick a team that I had confidence in to win at Kansas City in a shootout, I would go with the Buffalo Bills. Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills. Word to Chris Berman. Moving on to the second game of the day, NFC West matchup. Two teams I hate, loathe, and despise as a 49er fan. But as a football fan, I appreciated a good, well-played game. Rams 30, Seahawks 20. I'm going to start by saying this. Once again, quoting myself, one of the many things I always say about football. Football is, was, and always will be a game predicated on matchups. You win football games on blocking and tackling, game plan, and matchups. Those to me are the four pillars to winning a football game. If I could add a fifth pillar, it would be a quarterback with out of this world, unbelievable, generational, transcendent talent who could just take over a game by himself, like Mahomes, like Rodgers, like Deshaun Watson, like Josh Allen, Russell Wilson. Those great quarterbacks that can take over a game and lead you to victory based on their own exploits. But typically, a professional football game, especially a playoff football game, is won by matchups. And the Seattle Seahawks don't match up with the L.A. Rams. The 49ers match up with the Rams and beat them twice this year. But the 49ers, unfortunately, much to my chagrin, are no longer playing this season. But the Seahawks can't fuck with the Rams. That was proven today. Rams defense picked up 5 sacks, primarily with just their front 4 rushing. It wasn't like they were bringing a lot of pressure, calling up a lot of blitzes. They had 4 down linemen just obliterating Seattle's line up front. Seahawks pass protection provided as much protection as the security at the D.C. Capitol. That was the caliber of protection and security and resistance that the Seattle Seahawks offensive line was putting up against the Rams front 4. Aaron Donald single-handedly won this football game. I'm calling that right now. Aaron Donald is the definition of a grown-ass man. This dude takes on double teams, triple teams, taking on men 320, 330 pounds. He's about 290. He just throws people around. Like, it's incredible to watch. This dude is a fucking monster. The best defensive player in pro football. That's why, as a Niner fan, I've been saying for the past 2 or 3 years, one of the areas of need and concern on the 49ers is to fortify the interior offensive line. Not just because it cost us in Super Bowl 54, but because twice a year you have to go against the best defensive player in pro football, the best interior lineman in professional football. Twice a year you got to go see Aaron Donald, grown-ass man. Do you have the people up front necessary who are properly equipped to handle such a challenge? Such a thing doesn't exist. This dude just mauls people. He one of them brothers, you got to shoot him. You ain't stopping him. You can't make it a fair fight. You got to bring someone on the field and handle your business with him. You can't see Aaron Donald in a fair fight. Certainly not Mike Upati could see Aaron Donald in a fair fight. Mike Upati, former 49er, he was a part of those hardball teams, got thrown around today, got them just massacred up front, just destroyed. He looked like a small child going against Aaron Donald. At one point, I looked like he got benched because it was poor play. He had a false start. One or two false starts. And if he wasn't jumping off with a false start, he was getting thrown around and beaten up. You got to talk about Leonard Floyd also bringing pressure. You're talking about Michael Brockers. I mean, they got a lot of work over in L.A. They got the number one defense in the NFL for a reason. They got guys who can get after the quarterback. Then on the back end, you talk about Jalen Ramsey, who was this season been the kryptonite for D.K. Metcalf. Well, this season, in 3 games and 3 head-to-head matchups between Jalen Ramsey and D.K. Metcalf. Metcalf has 4 catches, 44 yards, 11 total targets, no touchdowns. Now, he had 2 touchdown receptions in this game, but he was not being covered by Jalen Ramsey on either one of those scores. In this game, he had 3 catches for 33 yards while being covered by Jalen Ramsey. So you have an elite corner that can match up with an elite receiver, nullifying his presence in the game. Metcalf had a few outbursts on the sideline as well in this game, was highly upset, very visibly frustrated with his lack of targets and the overall lack of production for the Seahawks offense. They show him on the sideline, wilding out, throwing a temper tantrum, going off and on the sideline on players and coaches and whatever. Fox, NFL loves doing that. When they see their brother wilding out on the sideline, they love to get the camera on him and make him look bad, like he's a petulant child and everything. And then DK Metcalf doesn't really help his case in not looking like a petulant child when he goes off on people on the sideline and then sits down and puts a pacifier in his mouth. So you're not really helping your cause too much with that, DK, but I never did like how they put the camera on people having an outburst on the sideline. It's football. It's an emotional game. Everyone's high strung. Everyone's into it. It's the playoffs. On top of all that, you want to win. You want to play well. You're going to have some moments. You're going to have some times where you blow up at one of your teammates or whoever. I don't think it's that big of a deal. To me, it just shows that someone's being competitive and they give a fuck. They're into the game. But DK Metcalf has a sideline outburst. It's 6-3 at this point. So you can tell the next time the Seahawks came on back on the field on offense, they were going to make a concerted effort to get the ball to DK Metcalf after he had just blown up on the sideline about his lack of targets and lack of production in the game. So they come out, you know, in a 3-by-1 formation, three receivers on top of the screen as you're watching it on TV. And just try to hit a quick, basic, easy wide receiver screen, little bubble screen, DK Metcalf, trying to kill two birds with one stone, trying to get Russell Wilson settled in, acclimated to the game, calm him down, because he was playing. He played like shit the entire game. But he was struggling. So to settle him down and to get DK Metcalf some touches, some targets, they come out and try to hit a quick wide receiver screen. Darius Williams from the L.A. Rams bursts through the wall that was set up with Swain and Lockett, jumps the route, makes the pick, takes it home for six. That's the first time this season someone has taken a wide intercepted a pass on the wide receiver screen and turned it into a pick six. And as I'm watching the game, I'm saying to myself, I don't think I've ever seen that. If I do, I don't remember. But it's rare you see someone jump a route on a screen, on a wide receiver screen, and is able to turn it into a pick six. Great anticipation by Darius Williams. You know, great, obviously a great job of film study. You can tell he's definitely been putting in the work in the film room. He anticipated that play and saw what was coming, able to quickly diagnose the play, quickly recognize what was going on, stepped in and made a pick six. Great job by Darius Williams. It also comes from playing the same team three times in a season. Those two teams are in the NFC West, are division rivals. So this is the third time this year the Rams and Seahawks have played each other. Once again, I no doubt that Williams has seen that play a bunch of times on tape and was able to step in and make a great play. Offensively for the Rams, Cam Akers carried the offense today, 28 carries, 131, one score. Easily the offensive player of the game for the Rams. At the quarterback position, they started the game with John Walford, no-name quarterback coming out of nowhere, making his first NFL playoff start for the injured Jared Goff, who broke his thumb 2 weeks ago, week 16, versus Seattle in Seattle. Had surgery about a week and a half ago, had three pins inserted into his thumb. He was available to play. He was on the sideline as a backup quarterback. Walford took a design quarterback run early in the game, tried to dive, pick up some extra yards, got hit by Jamal Adams, and was knocked out of the game. What was diagnosed as a stinger, with Coach Sean McVay, a.k.a. Hank Scorpio, said after the game that Walford was injured with a stinger. They evaluated him for a concussion protocol as well. He was even rushed to the hospital during the game, taken off the field, into the locker room, loaded into an ambulance, rushed to the hospital, then brought back, which is kind of weird. This during the time of COVID, to see a football player get rushed to the hospital that quick and then brought back to the stadium, like, are we taking all the necessary safety precautions? Did he get preferential treatment? Did he skip the line? Whatever. Walford gets hurt, gets taken out and taken to the hospital. They got to play now with Jared Goff. First of all, I like how Troy Aikman made this during the broadcast sound like this was the worst possible thing that could ever happen to the Rams. Jared Goff's a former number one pick. I know he's hurt. I know he has a fucked up thumb. He just had surgery on it. But still, the guy's a former number one pick. You know, I know he struggled this season, but he still has number one pick talent. So Jared Goff comes in the game, 9 of 19 for about .151, one touchdown late in the game to Robert Woods. That pretty much put the game out of reach and made it 30-13 at that point. But Goff comes in, like I said, not spectacular numbers, didn't exactly light it up, but he gave it a gritty, tough, you know, grown man NFL playoff performance. I appreciated the way Jared Goff played football today. You know, he showed his toughness. He showed leadership qualities out there. That was, like I said, the numbers aren't great, but it's not about the numbers on time. He was effective. He made throws when he had to. You could tell his thumb was bothering him. He definitely missed on a couple of throws here and there. Like I said, 9 of 19, less than 50% completion percentage. But at the same time, he made throws when he had to, and he won the game. He led his team to victory in relief of another quarterback in Walford going out. But he did his job. And, you know, I've been tough. I've been critical of Goff all season because I think he's regressed. I don't think he's played to a certain standard. becoming of a number one draft pick of a guy who took his team to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. I think he's a bit overrated. I think Sean McVay makes him better than what he is. Goff is like the SoCal version of Garoppolo. They both run pretty much the same offense. Shanahan and McVay's system are mirror images of each other. The Rams, that's one of the reasons why Shanahan and the 49ers have such great success versus the Rams, because we know what they're going to do. Because we do the same thing, except we do it better as far as execution and imagination of that same style of offense. And McVay and Shanahan used to work with each other in Washington many years ago. It's the same offense. And in a lot of ways, much of Garoppolo's success can be attributed to Kyle Shanahan's play calling and play design. It's the same way Jared Goff's success can be attributed to Sean McVay's play calling and play design. Since the Miami game this year, I thought Goff played like shit. It was a turnover machine. He appeared to be losing his confidence as a quarterback. Didn't play well down the stretch of the season. The Rams made the playoffs because of their defense and the running game with Cam Akers. But Goff today, I thought, answered the bell, played to a standard, showed what he was made of, and was able to execute and lead his team to victory in a big playoff game and upset the Seattle Seahawks. On the flip side of that, a tough game for Russell Wilson, Dangerous Wilson, 11 of 27, 174, two touchdowns, one interception on the pick six that he threw to Darius Williams when he jumped the route and screen pass. Russell got sacked five times a day, making that 52 times on the season. Russell Wilson has been sacked. Seattle's offensive line not doing him any favors. And it's pretty much been consistent throughout the entirety of Wilson's career in Seattle. But he's such an elite, mobile, and elusive quarterback. He's able to create plays out the pocket and compensate for the weak protection he's had in front of him. But eventually it catches up. When you go against a team like the Rams, who have a strong pass rush and a great front four, I mean, they just overwhelmed him today. Like I said, it wasn't even about bringing extra pressure. It wasn't even about calling blitzes. It was four down linemen kicking the Seattle Seahawks offensive line's ass time and time again, over and over again, and getting direct pressure in the face of number three, Dangerous Wilson. That's all you really can say. I mean, it's not even, I can't really knock Russ too much for his performance today. When your line's getting their ass kicked that badly, when you're under constant duress, when you're just running for your life every play, when you got to try to make chicken salad out of chicken shit every single down, because as soon as you drop back to pass with somebody in a beige, blue and gold, whatever the fuck color the Rams wear a uniform in your face, I'm not sure what you're supposed to do in that situation. Even the best, most elite quarterbacks look very ordinary, look very basic when they're under constant pressure and running for their life the entire game. Offensive line matters. And if your O-line plays like shit, your quarterback's probably going to play like shit too. That team is predicated largely, the team's success is predicated largely on Russell Wilson making big plays and carrying them week after week after week. That's not a formula for success. The running game is sketchy with Carson and Carlos Hyde and whoever they can find to run the football. You know what you're going to get offensively as far as the quarterback and the receivers are concerned with Wilson, Lockett, and DK Metcalf, and Disley and Wilson and guys like that, tight end. But you don't know what you're going to get in the run game with Seattle, and you don't know what you're going to get defensively. And their defense has improved down the stretch, especially with the addition of Carlos Dunlap from Cincinnati in a trade. But it was too little too late. They weren't able to make enough plays today, even against an injured, less than 100% Jared Goff. And the running game wasn't able to be effective. And the line got their asses handed to them play after play after play by that Rams front four. And that's why Seattle's going home. You can't protect your quarterback. You can't run. You can't get big stops defensively. You're going to lose playoff games. And the Seahawks found that out today. So Rams 30, Seahawks 20. Seahawks are one and done in the playoffs, and I possibly couldn't be any happier. Always good to see the Seattle Seahawks lose. Even if it's to another division rival, fuck it, the Rams will eventually get theirs. Moving on to Landover, Maryland. For the third and final NFL playoff game of the day, the 11-5 Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the playoffs for the first time since 2007, being led by, of course, the man who we all universally agree is the greatest quarterback in the history of professional football. If you disagree with that, you're a fucking idiot, and I will happily remind you of that. Tommy Brady leading the Tampa Bay Buccaneers into Landover, Maryland to play against the Washington professional football team from Landover, Maryland against unknown, undrafted quarterback Taylor Heinicke. Alex Smith injured versus the 49ers a few weeks ago, injured his calf on the same leg that he shattered in 2018, November of 2018. So Smith was ruled out this morning for the game. Taylor Heinicke got the start, and Taylor Heinicke balled the fuck out. Taylor Heinicke woke up this morning feeling dangerous. Taylor Heinicke woke up and chose violence. This dude was making plays all over the field, escaping pressure, showing poise and composure out there. Think about it. This guy's an undrafted quarterback from Old Dominion. This is a school best known for women's basketball. This guy coming from Old Dominion, he was studying for his degree a couple weeks ago, wasn't even in the NFL. He played in the Alliance of American Football. He played in the XFL. He's bounced around all over the league. Had no job in the NFL a few weeks ago. Was an emergency quarterback, only brought onto the roster because of Dwayne Haskins' foolishness and Alex Smith's injury history. Dwayne Haskins stunk it up 2 weeks ago against Carolina. He's gone. He's off the team now. Alex Smith hurt. Taylor Heinicke gets the start. Very impressive. No other way to put it. Evading pressure, escaping out the pocket, extending plays, running for first downs, throwing strikes downfield, executing the offense on time, off schedule, on schedule, different launch points, delivering passes downfield, accurate passes. He only threw about three or four balls I would consider bad balls all night. What more could you say? This dude was incredible. The dude, I was watching this game. I was so excited to see this guy play. I don't even know why. I just wanted to see, what could he do? What is he made of? How good can this guy be opposite Tom Brady in primetime in the NFL playoff game? And there he was, making plays all night. I'm looking at this dude as a 49er fan saying, I've never seen Jimmy Garoppolo make any of these plays, ever. There's about four or five instances throughout this game where if that was Garoppolo, he would have died on the play. He would have been sacked for a loss, probably would have got hurt when limped back to the locker room. This dude figured out a way to escape pressure. He shrunk in the pocket, literally. Shrunk his body, squatted down like he's taking a shit to escape out of pressure and roll out of the pocket and run to the goal line, stretch out and tag the pylon with the ball and score a touchdown. That's quarterbacking. That's modern-day NFL quarterbacking. That's what you need. You can't just play with a statue in the pocket. You need a guy that can move. You're not going to get the 1992 Dallas Cowboys Great Wall of Dallas offensive line. Sometimes your protection is going to break down. Your quarterback has to make plays like that. I thought the football team's line played okay for the most part. Played pretty well. Tampa Bay's got a great pass rush with Pierre Paul and Shaq Barrett and guys like that. I thought their line held up for the most part throughout the game. But when it didn't, when the protection broke down, Heinicke was able to step outside the pocket and make plays off schedule, extended. Pick up a first down, keep the drive going. Even a little, he had a play in the third quarter where he felt the pressure, escaped out of the pocket just for a little bit, and picked up 3 yards, slid, protected himself, took care of the football on first down to break it to 2nd and 7. That's not that big of a play. To the average person, to the average viewer, to the casual football fan, they're not going to recognize that as being a big pivotal play. But little plays like that help you score points in the NFL, help you win games that continue drives that keep you on schedule, keep you ahead of the down and distance. Instead of taking a loss and it being like 1st and 13, 1st and 15, 1st and 20, he's able to scramble a little bit, pick up 3 yards, make it 2nd and 7. That's manageable. You can work with that. And in the process, he didn't injure himself. He didn't get hurt. He did get hurt later in the game. He had what was revealed to be a stretched out, a torn AC capsule. We're evaluating him from potentially a broken collarbone or something like that. He got hurt, came up favoring his left side, had to leave the game for a little bit. They were warming up the backup quarterback, Steven Montez from Colorado, who's never played in the NFL. So this guy's about to come into his first NFL action in a fourth quarter of a playoff game versus Tom Brady. But then Heinicke comes out the locker room and steps back on the field, got his left shoulder, left arm taped up. Gets back on the field. Tampa's up 28-16 by the time Heinicke came back in the game. Takes him right down the field. Throws an 11-yard touchdown pass to Steven Sims in the back of the end zone. Dropped a dime on this touchdown pass. Perfectly placed football. Right down the chimney sweep. Right dropping the bucket to Sims. The play was reviewed. And I'm 100% with Tony Dungy on this. When Tony Dungy doing play-by-play for the game with Mike Tirico for NBC, Tony was very adamant, very transparent in his disgust for the fact that this play was even being reviewed. He was quoted as saying, that catch has been a touchdown catch for 100 years in the NFL. And he's right. Now, this is the 101st year of the NFL, as Tirico quickly corrected them on. But do we have to review everything? that play was clearly a touchdown catch. You slow down the flow and the pace of the game when you do shit like that. You waste 5 minutes of action, 5 minutes of time. That's a pet peeve of mine. I hate that shit in basketball when they got to confer at the scorer's table for like 5-10 minutes and look at a foul and look at the judge, the intent of the foul. Was it a technical? Was it a flagrant? I hate that shit in football. I hate when they do it in baseball. I like instant replay. I understand the concept and the point of it to get things as accurate as possible. But when we waste 5-10 minutes of game action looking at a play that's obviously a touchdown, there shouldn't be any question or debate about the play. He caught the football and got 2 feet in. That was a touchdown. When we waste this much time looking at stupid shit like that, I get irritated. It's a major pet peeve of mine whenever I'm watching sports. But back to Taylor Heinicke. I had to rant real quick. Every podcast deserves a good rant. Stupid shit happens. I react to it accordingly. I can't stand unnecessarily long replays in sports. That shit just pisses me off. But back to Taylor Heinicke. 26 of 44, 306 yards, a score, a pick. The pick, I wouldn't even attribute the pick being his fault. It was tipped to the line of scrimmage. It was a good read on the play, but the ball just tipped to the line of scrimmage. Those things happen. But 26 of 44, 306, 6 carries, 46 yards. He was a leading rusher on the team, by the way, with those 46 yards. Dude played out of his mind. It wasn't enough because the GOAT, Tom Brady, was just a little bit better. Brady on the evening was 22 of 40, 381, 2 scores, no picks. Got his 31st career playoff victory tonight. The Washington football team as a franchise has 23 career playoff wins. This is a franchise whose origins date back to 1932. Over 80 years of this franchise. EST, 1932, you see it all over FedEx Field. They got hats, sweatshirts, all that shit. EST, 1932 on it. Y'all been around that long, got 23 career playoff wins. Tom Brady been in the NFL, a starting quarterback in the NFL since 2001, has 31 career playoff wins by himself. The GOAT. How could you possibly say anything to the contrary? Do you watch football or do you just skim through it? The true and living GOAT showed you that there's levels to this shit tonight. Against a good quality Washington football team defense, Chase Young called him out. Young man, I would advise in the future, exercise restraint on things like that. As great street philosopher Sean Carter once pointed out, do not bark up that tree. That tree will fall on you. I don't know why your advisors didn't forewarn you. I condone talking shit. I have no problem with talking shit. I have no problem calling people out. I condone, support, and endorse all that shit. But certain guys, I'm going to leave alone. Tom Brady's in that category. I ain't saying shit to Brady. That'd be my advice to anybody. Chase Young's a good football player, good young player, first year in the league, rookie. But when you're playing with a guy like Tom Brady, you got to be careful. Because Brady's one of those guys, he's similar to Jordan and Kobe. He takes any slight, any sign of disrespect, anything that he perceives to be a negative, any talk against him, into motivation. He channels that and he takes his avocado smoothie and he just gets motivated and does his TB12 workouts with the pliability and the avocado smoothie, and whatever sign of slight and disrespect he might have gotten, he's gonna remember that. Tom Brady's 43, the most accomplished quarterback in the history of pro football, and still walks around with a chip on his shoulder. He's still trying to prove something to somebody. He's still trying to show you what he's capable of. 43 with everything that he's accomplished and still walks around and plays with a chip on his shoulder, I'm not saying shit to that guy. I'm going to let that man rock because I know he gonna come prepared regardless whether you say something or not. It's not like he just played well because Chase Young called him out. Brady was going to play well regardless. He's Tom Brady. But he doesn't need any extra added motivation. You think back a few years ago, a 2018 divisional AFC playoff game, Kevin Byard playing safety for the Tennessee Titans came out the week before and said, this is a playoff game, so I don't really care if it was Joe Montana. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to go out there and win the game. I want to make him look like Blake Bortles. If I can try, I'll make him throw a couple of picks. He said this about Brady leading up to the AFC divisional playoff game between Tennessee and New England in 2018. Brady threw 3 touchdown passes and the Patriots won 35-14. Do not poke the bear. Certain brothers, certain guys in sports, leave the fuck alone. Brady, Jordan, Kobe, LeBron, I guess. certain guys, Steph Curry, see how Curry's responded to all the criticism he had the first week of the season where he struggled, and everyone said, well, he's washed up, he can't play, he's overrated, he's exposed. All these dumbass, nonsensical things about Steph Curry, and he's been shitting on people ever since. Dame Lillard called him out, or said it's not so easy now, something along those lines. Then he put 62 on him. Leave certain athletes alone. Just if they're struggling, if they're in a slump, let them work their way out of their slump. Don't motivate them or give them any help to get out that slump. I'm not saying that just because a guy called him out, he's going to play better automatically because of that. That guy's going to play better because he's a great player. He's an all-time great legendary player. Generational talent in the pantheon of great players in their respective sports. Guys like that, leave them the fuck alone. Brady don't need no extra motivation to cook you. He will cook you anyway. Especially since the late bye week in week 13, the Buccaneers haven't lost a football game. And Brady's been lights out. Not throwing as many picks as he threw before that bye week in week 13. Didn't throw a pick today. But whatever issues he was having with Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich in regards to how the offense should look, should they be taking deep shots down the field, or should they run off play action and just pick you apart as Brady likes to do, as he did so well in New England for so many years? They figured out a way to marry the two philosophies together, you know, come to a compromise on offensive philosophies, and the Buccaneers have figured out a way to move on and win games. They haven't lost a game since coming out the bye week in week 13. Moving on to playoffs now, it's not like they're perfect. I mean, they did let an undrafted journeyman quarterback of the Old Dominion carve them up tonight. So they're going to have some issues going forward when the competition gets better, where you're going to see guys like potentially Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, you know, guys like that. You know, once the skill level increases, it's obviously going to test your defense even more. You're giving up big plays and big yards and scores to Taylor Heineke. What is Aaron Rodgers going to do with your defense? Even though the Bucs did beat the Packers early this year and pretty much shut Rodgers down. But we'll see. We still have to play some other games. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. You still got Chicago and New Orleans tomorrow, along with Baltimore and Tennessee and Pittsburgh and Cleveland. I'm going to make some predictions on those three games for tomorrow. I'm looking forward to Baltimore and Tennessee. These are two teams with built-in hostility and animosity towards each other. Baltimore has lost the last two games they played against Tennessee, including getting knocked out of the playoffs last year by the Tennessee Titans. Tennessee came in as a wild card team, upset Baltimore, who had the best record in the NFL, shut down Lamar Jackson. This is a big game tomorrow for Lamar Jackson. Lamar's 0-2 as a starter in the NFL playoffs. A lot to prove. Lost to the Chargers 2 years ago, lost to the Titans last season, didn't look good in either game. All Lamar's critics are going to be watching that game intently tomorrow to see how he looks. It's a show-and-prove game, and Lamar Jackson has to show-and-prove that he can play and win games in the NFL playoffs. I don't put a lot of stock into that. Peyton Manning struggled early in his career as a young quarterback in the NFL playoffs, and then he was able to win, start winning championships, and so on and so forth. For Lamar, it's only been two games, but at the same time, he hasn't won, and he hasn't played well either one of those games. So we'll see. I think if I had to make a prediction for that game, I would say Tennessee 32, Baltimore 28. Baltimore is a 3-point favorite despite the game being in Tennessee. They have home field, being the AFC South champion. Tennessee's defense is suspect. They don't generate much of a pass rush. They're 25th in the league in defense this year. A little weak on the back end. At the same time, I respect Lamar as a quarterback. I think Lamar is one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't like Lamar's weapons. Like a Snead and Hollywood Brown and Duvernay and guys like that. I don't see them as big play weapons and big play threats to stretch the field and take advantage of what Tennessee lacks defensively. I like Mark Andrews as a tight end, but that's a move to change possession type of guy. But I think Lamar's going to be able to make plays throughout the entire game to keep it close. But Tennessee's offense is next level. Tannehill's playing incredibly this season. Derrick Henry, your rushing champ. Over 2,000 yards rushing this season. You talk about A.J. Brown, Corey Davis. They got a lot of weapons over there in Tennessee. A lot of different ways to beat you. And I think even with their defense being suspect, the offense is good enough to compensate for that. So I'm sticking with 32-28 Tennessee in the first game being played tomorrow. The second game, New Orleans and Chicago. Chicago coming in as a number 7 seed, 10-point underdog in that game. I think New Orleans will win the game and cover. I think the biggest problem for the Bears tomorrow is that Roquan Smith is not playing. And what that means to me, why I see that as such a big problem, who's going to cover Alvin Kamara out the backfield? You know Drew Brees loves to dink and dunk it underneath the Alvin Kamara and hope he gets yards after the catch. I look forward to seeing a lot of that tomorrow. Michael Thomas is back, starting to round himself in the form after coming off injuries throughout most of the season. Emmanuel Sanders on the outside. Bears have a pretty good, respectable defense, but missing Roquan Smith, I think, is a big deal. I think the Saints are going to be able to do just enough offensively with Sean Payton's play calling and the versatility that Taysom Hill brings. And being at home, even though there's no fans, but still inside the dome where New Orleans is comfortable at. 10-point favorite. I see them covering that spread, I'm going to say. And even though Trey Henderson isn't playing for the Saints on defense, I think their defense is still good enough to get after it and cause pressure and fluster Mitchell Trubisky in this game. Trubisky, can you really trust him to go win the playoff game on the road in the Superdome? I would say no. So my prediction and final score, Saints, I'll say 31, Bears 16. Like I said, I just don't see this. I don't see Trubisky doing work versus that Saints defense, even without Hendrickson. So 31-16 Saints is what I predict for tomorrow. And then your nightcap, Cleveland versus Pittsburgh. You know, Brownies back in the playoffs for the first time since 2001. The last time they were in the playoffs, they played against Pittsburgh in one of the craziest wild card games ever played. Kelly Holcomb at quarterback going up against Tommy Maddox in that game. That was a long time ago. This time, Baker Mayfield versus Ben Roethlisberger. You know, Pittsburgh not 100% impressive down the stretch. Kind of faltered, got off to that 11-0 start. Lost some games down the stretch. But able to bounce back with a big win versus Indianapolis. Took last week off. Had Mason Rudolph playing. A lot of the other starters didn't play last week versus Cleveland in preparation for this playoff game. As far as Cleveland is concerned, I think the formula for success with Cleveland for tomorrow is the running game on both sides of the ball for them. They're going to come out offensively and establish the run with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. The worst thing Cleveland can do tomorrow is try to put the ball and put the game in the hands of Baker Mayfield. Do not have Baker come out there tomorrow and try to be the hero and sling it all over the yard and throw 30 or 40 times. Mayfield's attempt should be somewhere between 25 to 30 times, and it should lean heavily on the run game with Hunt and Chubb. And defensively, do their best to take away Pittsburgh's suspect running game and make Ben Roethlisberger beat you. As crazy as that might sound, take away the running game and make Ben at this stage of his career, who I think is starting to decline a little bit. I don't think Ben at this stage of his career is good enough to go just carry you to victory and win the game by himself. I think Pittsburgh is going to need other guys to step up, especially in the run game. If Cleveland can keep Pittsburgh's ground game in check and make Ben go win it by himself, make Ben shoulder the load, I think Cleveland has a shot to win this game. As a matter of fact, fuck it. I'm pushing all my chips to the center of the table. I'm banging the table. I'm going to make a proclamation right now. This is a hot take coming on the Dion Gordon podcast. The Cleveland Browns make their return to the NFL playoffs tomorrow and win in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania at Heinz Field against the arch nemesis, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Low scoring game, Cleveland 20, Pittsburgh 18. Browns 20, Steelers 18. Upset special of the weekend. Go ahead and bet the farm on it. Empty out your savings account. Take it from me. It's a guaranteed winner. Can't fail. Can't lose. Cleveland Browns tomorrow. Go into Heinz Field. Beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 20-18. Book it right now. Those are my predictions for tomorrow. I can't wait till tomorrow. Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Baltimore, Tennessee, Bears, Saints, NFL, Super Wild Card, Playoff Football. Football all weekend, 6 football games on. This is a man's dream come true. It's a football fan's dream come true. This is awesome. Nothing but positivity. Football, the greatest sport in the world. Celebrate, rejoice, bask in the glory of NFL wildcard football. That's it for me on this edition of the Dion Gordon Podcast. Picture me rolling. I'm out.